From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, State Senator Wendy Davis makes it official. She is the hope for the Democrats to win the governor's mansion.
Texas has always been a promise. The promise that where you start has nothing to do with how far you can come.
Who's to blame for the federal government shutdown? Texas Republican congressmen say not them, but they will take credit for it.
In your everyday life, if you're not trying to visit a national park or have something going on with the government at this particular moment, it's not the end of the world.
And an Amarillo High School senior performs a social experiment and finds out what it's like to be pregnant and the center of a scandal.
The way people look at you, the way the hallway gets completely silent when you walk by, that people stop talking, people stop walking, people look and they stare.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. There was no suspense, but plenty of excitement on Thursday when State Senator Wendy Davis made it official that she is running for governor. Davis's advisors say it's important for the Democratic contender to combat the liberal label opponents want to pin on her. So she's running as a pro-business uniter of Texans and not a polarizing figure. KERA's Shelley Koffler says defining her values is part of what she tried to do as she announced her candidacy in her hometown of Haltom, Texas.
50-year-old Wendy Davis announced her long-expected bid for governor on the stage where she received her high school diploma 32 years ago.
Thank you.
It was a setting Davis used to retell her story of being a struggling single mother of 19 who eventually graduated from Harvard Law School.
The Texas I came up in made it possible for me to go to school.
It was a setting she used to highlight education as a key election issue.
I worry that the journey I made is a lot steeper for young people in Texas today. College is more expensive. The choices for working families are fewer, and far too many young people yearning to continue their own educational journeys are turned down for grants and loans because state leaders have turned a deaf ear to their needs and blocked their path.
Then Davis delivered what may become the tagline for her campaign.
Texas has always been a promise. The promise that where you start has nothing to do with how far you can come.
Davis talked about how she filibustered a bill 2 years ago that cut deeply into school funding. But she never mentioned the June filibuster that brought her national fame, the 11-hour battle that temporarily derailed a bill banning most abortions. Opponents have already signaled they intend to attack Davis's pro-choice position. In fact, outside the auditorium, several dozen anti-abortion activists who support Republican opponent Greg Abbott waved signs reading No to Wendy and No to Murder. Pam Ayers of Burleson was among them.
She had a discussion about how much she was for abortion. I'm here to show my support for pro-life and Greg Abbott.
But Mary Beth Rogers of Dallas doesn't think the abortion issue is a problem for Davis.
I think the personal choice of women is very important to women all over this state.
Rogers served as chief of staff for Ann Richards, the last Democrat and woman to occupy the Texas governor's office. Rogers says she sees similarities between Davis's uphill fight and what Richards faced in 1990.
When she started out that race, she was 27 points behind in the race. People did not think she had a shot at winning.
Rogers believes a shift in voting patterns is why Davis could beat the odds this time.
You're seeing a change among suburban women. They are turning away from right-wing Tea Party rhetoric in droves. So there's great potential for Wendy there.
But potential only counts if you can turn it into votes. Doing that is the task now facing Wendy Davis.
Thank you.
Shelley Koffler, KERA News.
In Washington, D.C., the lack of a continuing resolution passing Congress and being signed by President Obama means the federal government shutdown continues. The reason we don't have a CR is because Republican lawmakers led by Texas freshman Senator Ted Cruz are demanding that the Affordable Care Act be defunded, delayed, or seriously altered. And the Democrats just aren't willing to do that. So federal employees who are called not essential are told not to come back to work. Many government services have been temporarily switched off, disrupting lives and operations. And the Washington, D.C. blame game is in full swing. Texas Republican Congressman Blake Fahrenholt of Corpus Christi says the government shutdown could be over quickly if only the Democrats would give in.
Listen, I think everybody in Washington is committed to ending the government shutdown, and we in the House are just waiting for the Senate to get to the point they're willing to talk to us.
And the Senate says they're waiting for the House to pass what they call a clean CR, continuing resolution.
That's correct. And, you know, historically throughout our government, the continuing resolutions and debt ceilings have been used in divided government for the one party or the other to move forward some of their agenda. Never in history have we heard this my way or the highway mentality that's coming out of the White House or the Senate.
So how are things looking right now? I mean, we do have what we call the government shutdown, and so there are non-essential parts of the federal government are not functioning, and federal workers who are deemed non-essential have been furloughed. How long do you think this is going to last? Because clearly your side, the GOP in the House, Not doesn't look like you're budging, and it doesn't look like President Obama and Harry Reid in the Senate are budging either.
To me, we're willing to budge. We started out with the complete defunding of Obamacare and basically have negotiated with ourselves all the way down to, all right, we'll go ahead and fund Obamacare, but we want it to be fair. We don't want people to have to go out and buy insurance, the individual mandate, when President Obama's big donors and the companies and unions have been delayed a year because it's not ready. We've already seen that the websites for individuals buying insurance aren't ready either. So let's be fair. Let's not treat the Obama donors and Obama supporters better than we treat the average man or woman on the street.
Okay, so I understand that, and I know you've got your talking points, and you want to get them out there, and that's all fine and dandy. But what's going to happen, because you've got your talking points and you've got your positions, and we're not seeing any weakening so far. So how long do you think this can go on?
Well, you know, I don't know. We feel like we've given and given. They're not even telling us that they're not willing to take anything beyond a clean CR. I mean, what that means is if we send a CR over there naming a post office in Washington, D.C. after President Obama, they would vote no on it. That's ludicrous that they won't talk to us about including anything in the CR. We're very frustrated here in the House because we've passed, we're at the point of hundreds of bills that aren't seeing the light of day in the Senate. So we want to move some of our agenda forward.
Correct. And I'm sure that if you had a CR that would fully fund the government and name a post office after President Obama, they would go along with that. But the issue is,
that's not what they're saying.
Well, but is that on the table?
No. But
okay. Let's not talk about that.
I'm trying to point out the absurdity of their situation of
correct.
A clean CR or nothing.
Right. But the thing is about funding the Affordable Care Act or delaying the implementation, the rollout of the Affordable Care Act. No.
And again, we're not delaying. Our last offer didn't delay the implementation of anything. All it delayed was forcing people who didn't want to buy insurance to buy it. Everything else happens. I mean, as a conservative, that was a big reach for me.
And so we're willing to have the government be defunded and being basically hobbled in the state that it is in today for...
I think most Americans have not seen a huge impact on the shutdown of the government. We have, and any areas that are negatively affecting people's lives that come to our attention, we are sending over to the Senate authorizations to do that. We've sent over an authorization to fund the National Institute of Health so cancer victims can get their treatment. We've sent over stuff to a variety to fund our veterans getting their claims processed. We don't want to do any damage here. We just want to work the way the founding fathers intended. When the House and Senate disagree on something, all throughout history, they've appointed negotiators, conferees, to go to a conference. The Senate won't even appoint conferees to conference with us.
And there have been attempts for the Senate to appoint conferees in the past to talk about budget negotiations, and there were Republican members of the Senate who blocked that.
So that's not really what this is all about. We weren't in a crisis then. We're in a government shutdown now.
The crisis that we're in now is more exacerbated because we have not seen the appropriations that normally had been done. None of them have happened in this Congress.
We sent five appropriations bills in five areas over to the Senate earlier this year. They've chosen not to take those up. Had those five appropriations bills been taken up in regular order by the Senate and conferees appointed, that much less of the government would be shut down now.
But that is, I understand what you're saying, and I understand the process, and I know that that was not the Democrats' fault. That was a Senate issue, yes, but there are Republicans in the Senate that prevented that from happening. But let's get to the point about, you say that there are, unfazed is a word that you've used about where we are right now with the government shutdown.
I don't think I've ever used the word unfazed.
Okay, I read that, and maybe
that was a reporter characterizing what he or she thought about what I'd said. I worry about it constantly. Because we do a lot of casework in our office for veterans that are taking over a year for their disability claims to be processed, which is shameful, and it's only being exasperated by this.
And earlier you said that many people, most Americans, have not experienced any sort of impact from the government shutdown.
I stand by that. The vast majority of folks, obviously, that's not true of government employees and some contractors. But in your everyday life, if you're not trying to visit a national park or have something going on with the government at this particular moment, it's not the end of the world. But listen, I'm worried about those folks who are out of work. If history's any indication, they'll get back pay and we're not going to get the value of their service during this government shutdown.
So the government shutdown is one thing, but the debt ceiling, man, that's another thing. And that is worrisome, don't you think?
I think we've got an opportunity here with both the continuing resolution and the debt ceiling to reach a grand bargain with the Senate and the President. I'm optimistic that the timing of these things coming up together will give us the opportunity to move forward.
Right, and a grand bargain has been put on the table before and was not taken up. And President Obama said he was willing to talk about that in the past. But I think now he's saying, let's get through these hurdles. Let's not mess around with the debt ceiling, and then we can come back around and talk about these things.
And
is that acceptable?
So if there's no continuing resolution and no debt ceiling, what leverage or influence do we have to get them to give an inch on anything? Nothing.
You're the House.
And we control the purse string. That's
yes.
The way the founding fathers intended.
Right.
We've closed the purse until they're willing to talk.
So in the future, eventually, who knows what happens? You know how politics are, and the mood of the people. There will be a Democrat House and a Republican in the White House. And maybe there are laws that the Democrat House would want to see taken off the books that had been passed and were totally, had gone and have been approved by the Supreme Court. Don't you think if you go into this sort of tactic, if this tactic has become part of the system repeatedly over and over again, how are we going to have a functioning government?
This is the 17th government shutdown, the vast majority of which were done when Democrats were in control of Congress. This is nothing new. I think 15 of the 17 past government shutdowns were a Democrat Congress dealing with a Republican president.
Yeah, but those were minor shutdowns. They're not the same thing as what we have today. You know, each instance is its own, has its own unique properties and characteristics. But this one seems to be much more severe because we have not gotten any appropriations through the legislature this past year. And so things seem to be at the stakes are much higher.
I think we're pretty much in the exact same boat and would be out of that boat if the president and the Senate were willing to talk about it. It is an unsustainable position that we're not willing to talk or negotiate. My way or the highway is not the American way. It's not what the founding fathers intended, and it's not what has happened throughout history in dealing with both continuing resolutions and debt ceiling.
How's your office going? Are you getting phone calls? What are people telling you?
The vast majority of my phone calls that come from the district I represent, which is, you know, Corpus Christi, Victoria, on up to the outskirts of Austin and Bastrop and Luling, have been supportive. We've got quite a few angry, profanity-laced calls, but all of those have come from area codes that show up on caller ID as not even being from Texas.
If you're not willing to give, and Harry Reid says he's not, and Barack Obama says he's not, are we just going to be going through this for quite some time? We just got to just wait it out until what happens?
I think it's going to be up to the American people to decide how this ends and who needs to give in. And when public pressure on one side or the other reaches the point that there's enough pressure for either side to change their position, that's when it's going to happen. I think this really is going to be a battle that's waged in the forum of public opinion.
A lot of people are really worried that this is going to be very hurtful for us as a functioning democracy.
I don't think this is going to extend beyond the end of the debt ceiling. I'm very concerned about the debt ceiling. We can undo a government shutdown based on spending, but if the financial markets that loan us money are shaken by our inability to raise the debt ceiling and the interest we have to pay on the vast amount of money that we borrow goes up, there's no undoing that from Congress.
Blake Farenthold is the Republican congressman from Corpus Christi. We recorded that interview on Thursday afternoon. He supports the Republican-controlled House's effort to not fully fund the federal government unless the Affordable Care Act is defunded, delayed, or seriously altered. The Alamo, the cradle of Texas liberty, is frequently the site for political demonstrations and free speech, and on Saturday, October the 19th, it's going to be the scene of a mass political protest in favor of gun rights in Texas. The event is called Come and Take It, San Antonio, and there will be a peaceful but armed march of about 1,000 participants. C.J. Grisham is the president and founder of Open Carry Texas.
We had a couple of guys that were arrested a little over a month ago at Starbucks while exercising their rights within the law. Weren't doing anything wrong. Somebody called the police and claimed to be alarmed. The police showed up and charged them with disorderly conduct for basically really doing nothing wrong but sitting down and enjoying a coffee. The guns weren't even in their hands. They were just sitting next to them. And so as a response to that action, which we completely believe to be a false arrest or false charges, we organized Come and Take It San Antonio on October 19th as a way to, you know, educate the public about our right to carry firearms and also to protest the actions of the police officers that cited our guys.
The video of the folks who were at the San Antonio Starbucks, they had their firearms with them, and we're going to post that on our website so people can see how that actually happened, and they were ticketed for disorderly conduct.
Correct, yeah. Section A8 of disorderly conduct states that if you knowingly or intentionally carry a firearm in a manner calculated to cause alarm, that you're guilty of disorderly conduct. The problem is that it's such a broad and vague statute that it's just up to interpretation by individual officers, and many think that just because someone calls and says they're alarmed that meets the legal definition, and we are fighting that and definitely disagree.
So now that you're having the Come and Take It, the Alamo rally, and you're expecting about 1,000 people to attend, and you're encouraging them to bring their open carry of firearms with them and demonstrate their constitutional rights to carry weapons.
Absolutely. In Texas, it is legal without a permit to openly carry a rifle or a shotgun or even an 1899 or prior pistol. We want people to bring those, and we've got a few reasons we want to do that. Obviously, one is to educate the public. Two is to show that we can do, you can carry these weapons safely. There's obviously a major narrative at the national scene that's trying to demonize certain weapons in the media and as well as in the public conscience, and we want to change that. So we organize these Come and Take It events as a way to show that, a guy with a weapon isn't necessarily a danger to anybody, and 1,000 guys with a weapon isn't a danger to anybody.
Let's talk about the safety precautions that you're going to have at this event at the Alamo. I mean, obviously safety is going to be a big part of what you're going to be doing. So how does that going to work?
Yeah, we're going to have a few dozen safety people that will be monitoring. Some of them will be marked with armbands, and some of them will not be marked at all, just so that people aren't trying to avoid the guys with armbands and do something unsafe. While it's not against the law to have a loaded firearm while you're carrying it around openly, as a matter of fact, when I do my individual carries or my little smaller group carries, I always have a loaded weapon. But because of the nature of this and the sensitivity of the Alamo and being downtown, we're going to try and make this as safe as possible. So we're making sure that nobody has a round chambered in the weapon. They can have a magazine loaded, but we're going to have straws and chamber flags that will show people that there's nothing in the barrel that can be readily fired. And we're going to be enforcing that very strictly. And if people don't abide by the rule of having an unloaded weapon and by that nothing chambered, they will be asked to leave. And if they don't leave, then we'll get the police involved. We're working very closely with the Alamo Rangers as well as the San Antonio Police Department on this.
You're asking people to follow a proper muzzle etiquette. Tell me about that.
Yeah, proper muzzle etiquette is with the weapon pointed down. There's two schools of thought on that, having a weapon carried up and having a weapon carried down. The problem with having it up is, if you've got someone taller than you standing next to you, well, the barrel's pointed at their head. So even if there were to be a negligent discharge of a weapon, if it's pointed down, you're less likely to have a serious injury. So we ask people to point their weapons down on their backs, not to have them in front of them slung. And that's the safest way possible. Obviously have the weapon on safe, no rounds in the chamber, and everybody will have a chamber flag again that'll show that. It'll either be their straw or a little plastic device that inserts into the chamber there. And that's how we're going to enforce that. And we're asking people to kind of check each other. If they see something unsafe, everybody out there is a safety officer. So if you see something unsafe, bring it up and then contact one of our guys if they don't fix it. And we're going to make sure that we get 1,000 guys in there, 1,000 guys and gals out of the Alamo with not a single injury, not a single shot fired. And we haven't had any problems to date, and we don't plan to ever have any problems because we do stress safety during these events.
And so the intent of this protest or demonstration is to try to change policy at the San Antonio Police Department about the way the SAPD enforces open carry?
Yeah, absolutely. And to be honest with you, we've already done that. I think the SAPD sent out a training bulletin shortly after the arrest, after we published the video, as well as a follow-up phone call to one of the senior officers that, tried to basically say that we would arrest you guys if you open carried in our city, and we don't think you should carry firearms. And that's when I explained to them that, our rights aren't dependent on your opinion. And so we're going to bring everybody to San Antonio and basically kind of force you guys to accept it. And we have a very good working relationship with San Antonio PD now. I think after they sent out that training bulletin about what our rights are in the state of Texas, their attitude has completely changed. They understand now. When we went down a couple days ago to do our coordination, a few of us were carrying our rifles in downtown San Antonio, handing out pamphlets and things like that. And SAPD was completely professional and understand now. I think it may have just been a couple of officers that thought they could you know, do whatever they want to do. But Chief McManus has sent out a training bulletin, and we're working with SAPD now.
The name of the rally, Come and Take It San Antonio, and of course that's a reference to Texas history and to Come and Take It at Gonzales. But no one's really trying to take your weapons. You're not challenging them to come and take it. I mean, that's kind of confrontational, don't you think?
No, not at all. I mean, the whole point of Come and Take It, they're not trying to take our weapons, but what they're trying to do is take our freedom to carry them. And that's what we're alluding to right there, is that right there. Because when you're charging people for disorderly conduct, for just carrying your weapon, the response to that, or the obvious, I guess, second order effect is, well, if you don't carry it, you won't be charged. So in a sense, they are taking our weapons away from us, because they're taking away our right to bear them.
So you have the right to bear arms. You have, at least according to the present interpretation of the Constitution. But why? Why do you feel compelled to be armed all the time?
Well, no, there's a time and a place. We're not compelled to be armed all the time. What we want is we're trying to get the law changed in Texas to allow open carry of pistols. 43 states already allow open carry in their states. And we want to draw attention to the absurdity that I can walk around with an AR-15 or an AK-47 or a, you know, 30-30 hunting rifle, and I can't walk around with my Smith & Wesson, you know, 40 caliber pistol openly. So what we're trying to do is get that law changed to allow us to open carry in Texas.
I understand there's the right, and sometimes you need to have a weapon and defend your home and your family, and I don't want to have any compromises in those areas, but to go to Walmart, you got to have a loaded weapon on your side. That doesn't add up to me.
No, actually, it makes perfect sense, because if a criminal comes in and sees armed people, he's less likely to commit a crime. The deal with concealed carry is that you've got a criminal that walks in may or may not see people that are armed, and he's already committed the crime before anyone can respond to it. With open carry, it's pretty obvious that there's armed people in there, and criminals are cowards. They're looking for soft targets. You know, openly carrying a firearm prevents those crimes before they even begin.
C.J. Grisham is the president and founder of Open Carry Texas. He is organizing an armed march at the Alamo on October 19th to promote the open carry of firearms in Texas. There was a technical glitch in that interview recording, that annoying beep. I apologize for that. At Randall High School in Amarillo, senior Kelly Bashel was the center of a scandal. She is one of the more high-profile and popular girls in school, considered a go-getter with a super bright future. But then she showed up at school pregnant. She found herself shunned, ridiculed, and the target of parents who did not approve. Then Kelly shocked the school again by revealing that she was not a teenage unwed mother-to-be. It was all faked to see what would happen. Kelly then wrote about her experience for the high school paper. Kelly Bashel is a senior at Randall High School in Amarillo. As a social experiment, she faked being pregnant at school and monitored how her schoolmates treated her. She wrote about the experience for her high school paper, The Silver Streak, and we've got a link to that story on our website at tpr.org. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org, or you can comment directly on our website at tpr.org. That's also where you can listen to past Texas Matters programs. And you can also listen to us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.